And now, live from Level 5 Productions on the island of Milleronia, it's the Larry Miller Show!
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who's always wanted a brand new seersucker suit. Hi, folks, and welcome back to the Larry Miller Show. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And boy, oh boy, it's beautiful here today. I'm on the mainland, and of course, so is Colonel Jeff. We're going to be on Milleronia, but, well, there's a big cold going around. And cold or flu, and the colonel and I were talking about this. I don't even know the difference. He doesn't even know the difference. Maybe you don't know the difference. Well, I have a cold. I have the flu. What's the difference? At any rate, he's feeling fine, much, much, much better. And he said, no, I'm coming to Stately Miller Manor, and let's do our show. And I said, and you are... But you know what? He did come, and we're happy to be with you guys. So thank you and welcome. And well, we're happy. We always are. We love show business and we love our show. And you know what? That yes, I've said it before and I'll say it again. The music helps so much. I love our music. That's of course the Buck Henry Orchestra and the Sioux Lion Dancers, featuring boy tenor Brad Simpson asking the musical question, unlike warfare, how is it that in stand-up comedy you can bomb without killing and kill without bombing? That's a good one, Brad. And by the way, exactly true. It's exactly true. It made me think, and I was talking to the colonel about this, why does show business have so many violent words to describe itself? If you think about it, you've heard them all. Dying on stage. Oh, he was dying on stage. Or break a leg. Doing a hit on a show like Anderson Cooper, say, or The Tonight Show. Yeah, I'm doing a hit on Anderson Cooper. All right. And things like knock him dead. Knock him dead. Or I slayed him. You know, those are all pretty tough words. But bombing and killing are great examples, Brad. And by the way, if you think about it, they actually mean two different things. They sound the same, but, well, bombing means doing horribly. You know, that, oh, I was bombing. And that means you did a really bad show. And killing, well, that was a great show. I killed him. And by the way, the colonel reminded me, in pop music, they have them too. Like, that song is number four with a bullet. Really? Okay, with a bullet. So I guess that not a spear anymore, or nothing like that. But that's the point. And by the way, I have something to tell you. Break a leg doesn't mean what you think it means. I thought for my whole life, not just in show business, but all the adulthood in show business, that break a leg meant saying something terrible, that you didn't want to go up to someone and say, traditionally in show business, have a great show, do a great job, you're terrific. You didn't want to focus on that, so you'd say the exact opposite. Hey, break a leg. The worst thing that can happen, break a leg before you perform. That's what I always thought. And I didn't find out until just, well, 5 or 6 years ago that break a leg doesn't mean that at all. It comes from Shakespeare's day when there was always one person brought out at the end of the play, one cast member who did so well that they called him out. The audience called him out to break a leg. What do you mean, break a leg? What does that mean? Here's what it means. In Shakespeare's day, taking a bow, being asked to take a bow, wasn't the way we think of taking a bow today, where you have your feet together and you bow and smile and say thank you and wave or something like that. Doesn't mean that at all. If you think of the way those folks used to bow, picture this in your mind. They had one leg behind them and one leg in front, which they'd bend and then swoop an arm down and bow that way, putting the weight on the bent leg. But the leg was, think of this, it was bent, or in their time, broken. That's what they called bending a leg like that to take a bow, to break your leg. And so saying that to someone, an actor before a show, break a leg, I wasn't saying anything bad. It was saying the greatest thing in the world to that actor. You be so terrific tonight that the audience will call you out, one person, you, to break a leg. And, I think that's pretty neat. In any case, though, good find there, Brad. Yeah, unlike warfare, how is it that in stand-up comedy you can bomb without killing and kill without bombing? Pretty good find there, Brad. And you know what? Keep us in touch. If you think of anything else that has really terrible violence in it and has to do with show business, we'd like to know and we'll tell everyone out there. And now it's worth sending, a great fond tip of the hat. Buck Henry passed away, and I think it was last week. Colonel Jeff thought it was last week. Well, Buck Henry, what a great talent he was as a writer, as an actor, and as a director. Buck Henry, by the way, wrote The Graduate, the movie, and was nominated for the Academy Award for writing that script. And he was nominated for Best Director for an Academy Award in Heaven Can Wait. And, you may not know this, co-created Get Smart with Mel Brooks. And, God bless him. He was a great talent. And he's passed on now. And so did Sue Lyon. What a wonderful actress. God bless her. And so beautiful. And among many other movies, by the way, she was Lolita in Stanley Kubrick's movie, Lolita. And if you remember, she was a terrific actress in that. She played that part beautifully. And yeah, she was great in it. And holy mackerel, pretty in it too. So, it always means a lot to say to people we're so fond of. And Buck Henry and Sue Lyon are two of them. And by PayPal. That's right, PayPal. Well, we always say, and I love saying this, you don't have to say, join the Platinum Club or do this or do that. You know what? Buy us some drinks. That's our favorite hello. Go to PayPal. You can get there 100 different ways, computer, laptop, iPhone, whatever you want. But you know what? Let us get you there. Let us take you there. We're still the best way to go. What you do is go to our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com. Who's on the mountain, Tom Mix? Oh, forgive me. I should have had the fish. At any rate, you know what? Go there. Go to, because we have on our website a banner that says PayPal. Click that banner and we'll get you there. You click the PayPal banner and then go take a nap in your big lazy boy chair and put a magazine over your face and we'll get you to PayPal. It's a terrific group and we're glad they like us and we like them. And that brings me to my favorite part of the show, the joke of the week. There's still nothing more fun than this. I hope like you, that great music, great art, great writing, great books, great theater, and great comedy. There's just nothing like it, whether it's a joke that you can pass on and tell someone else. And that's what it is in this case. I love telling a joke to you. And this one is pretty good. Colonel and I got a good laugh out of it. There are two fellas on the golf course, and of course they're playing golf. And they're having a great day of it. And on the fourth tee, they're about to, take another hole, and one of the guys puts his ball down on the pin there, and he steps back and he starts swinging the hips and getting the arms ready and getting that club up against it. And at that second, he sees, and his friend sees, there's a funeral procession going by on the little road right next to the golf course. And it's, well, you know, it's a funeral procession. They're not going fast. And the fellow who's up there on the tee takes his cap off and covers his heart with it and just watches as the funeral goes by. And then as soon as they go by, he puts the cap back on and approaches the ball again. And his friend says to him, gee, I'll be honest, Bill, you know, that was awfully nice of you. I don't remember you doing something that nice. And he says, well, I was married to her for 27 years. We got a kick out of that. Oh, what a nice man. On the day of her funeral, you said instead to yourself, you know what, I think I'll go out for a round of golf with my friend Ed. I'm not going to go to her funeral. Well, that's a pretty good joke, though. We got a kick out of it, and I hope you did, too. And as always, keep a good joke alive. Tell it to your friends at work or someone in your family or one of your pals, anywhere at all. But if it means something to us, I hope it means something to you. This brings me to my second favorite part of the show, the Poetry Corner. That fella just can't cure that cough before the beautiful string quartet plays. This is by a terrific poet, a great writer we like very much, and I've read from before, Ella Wheeler Wilcox. And this poem is called Change. Changed? Yes, I will confess it, I have changed. I do not love you in the old fond way. I am your friend still. Time has not estranged one kindly feeling of that vanished day. But the bright glamour which made life a dream, the rapture of that time, its sweet content, like visions of a sleeper's brain they seem, and yet I cannot tell you how they went. Why do you gaze with such accusing eyes upon me, dear? It is so very strange that hearts, like all things underneath God's skies, should sometimes feel the influence of change. The birds, the flowers, the foliage of the trees, the stars, which seem so fixed and so sublime, vast continents and the eternal seas, all these do change with ever-changing time. The face our mirror shows us year on year is not the same. Our dearest aim or need, our lightest thought or feeling hope or fear, all the law of alternation heed. How can we ask the human heart to stay content with fancies of youth's earliest hours? The year outgrows the violets of May, although maybe there are no fairer flowers, and life may hold no sweeter love than this, which lies so cold, so voiceless, and so dumb. And will I miss it, dear? Why, yes, we miss the violets always, till the roses come. Isn't that nice? By golly. Ella Wheeler Wilcox. And you know what? What's better than a more beautiful poem like that that really makes you stop and think and listen and smile? Thanks, Ella. And that brings me to my third favorite part of the show, the magic movie moment. This is a very good movie. It's been a long time since I've seen it. The Big Easy from 1986, directed by Jim McBride, starring Dennis Quaid, Ellen Barkin, Ned Beatty, John Goodman, Ebby Rose Smith, Lisa Jane Persky, so many others, and one of the greatest actors I've ever seen in movies, Grace Zabriskie, who plays, well, Mama. She plays Dennis Quaid's mother on this, in this family of Cajuns, well, down in the Big Easy, New Orleans, or Nolens, as they more likely pronounce it down there. Oh, folks, it's a terrific movie. It's a lot of fun and tells a story with great drama. And what a cast. Good Lord. And there's a wonderful magic movie moment for me in this. There are many in this movie, but it has drama and comedy and everything and love. And in this movie, they have, well, if you know anything about Cajuns, the whole Cajun life and the Cajun culture, which is sort of a slang word meaning Canadian. So Canadians, from the 18th century on, started moving down through what became us, the United States, and they went all the way down to, well, Louisiana and to a lot of places like that. But they are very big then, they were very big now, and holy mackerel. They are so much fun to be with, and I can't tell. I've worked down there. I've been in many things. And there's one great moment, by the way, in The Big Easy. They have, a family clam bake and beer fest at their house there, which is in the middle of nowhere. No one knows where. And Dennis Quaid plays detective, a homicide detective in New Orleans, and well, he says he wants to. He's falling for Ellen Barkin's character, and she plays a district attorney down there. And she's a little tougher, and you know what? She's got the sniff on corruption there, and she's looking here and there and everywhere. And Dennis Quaid says to a couple of his cousins there, and everybody's a cop, and they all work together. So they're in uniform, they're on duty, and he says, go get her and bring her over to the party here. So that's what they do, remember? And that kind of culture, they just go get you. They don't call up. They don't send an invitation. These two guys come up in a police car, and Ellen Barkin is jogging. She's jogging. She got her shorts on and sneakers and a T-shirt, and she's kind of sweaty, but she's jogging all around her neighborhood. Then these fellas come up, and they pull over, and they just stop her. And they said, yeah, we're here to get you to bring you to this party. And she said, well, what do you mean a party? And she said, I don't want to go to a party and this and that. And they said to one of them, says to her in that great Cajun, honey, just get in the car. And she does. She gets in their car. And they drive her over to the house there in her jogging outfit. And she meets for the first time, just goes walking up to the house, after crossing, I think, a creek there, or crick, and there's Grace Zabriskie walking along the porch there. She's just got a couple of bottles of beer in each hand. She's such a great actress, Grace. They all were. Good Lord, Ellen Barkin. But you know what? She says to Grace, to the mom, hi, listen, I'm so-and-so. I'm sorry I'm wearing I was running. And Zabriskie, in such a great way, just looks at her and says, running? And she performs that in one word so beautifully. She just reflects, running? Why in the Lord's name would you were running? When you could have been here eating clams and drinking beer, run it. And she just looks at Ellen for a second and then just turns and continues walking down the porch with the bottles of beer. And it's wonderful, as great as Ellen Barkin is. I mean, she plays that beautifully. Her character, there's nothing to say. Because what would you say? There's no one has anything to say to that. I love that moment, and that's a magic movie moment for me. It's a terrific movie. There's search for justice. There's search for safety. And, well, their search for love. Dennis Quaid and Ellen Barkin fall for each other, and they're on slightly different sides because, well, you know what? They have to get on the same side. And what do you think is going to happen? Just see that movie. It's another, oh, it's a good one. The Big Easy, which is a great slang nickname for New Orleans itself. The Big Easy. So you know what, folks? If you haven't seen it, see it. If you have, if you've seen it 20 times, see it again. I want to. And you know what it reminded me? I've been in New Orleans so many times as a comedian, and also I've worked in fact, it was another movie also with Dennis Quaid. I love that guy, and what a terrific actor. And this movie was called Undercover Blues. We shot completely in New Orleans. I never know how to pronounce it. New Orleans. New Orleans. Nolans. But at any rate, I lived in New Orleans for 2 months there with the rest of the cast. And of course, everybody on the movie. And it was summertime. Let's see, that's right. It was July and August. And as you may know, it can get pretty hot there in July and August in New Orleans. And, you know, the colonel pointed this out. Every part of our country is different from every other part, but no place is more different than New Orleans. And that place is like another planet, and it's exactly true. You know what, folks? It's such a great place to be, but you really ought to get used to the place. You really ought to learn as much as you can, as fast as you can, so you know where you're going, so you know what to expect, and so you don't feel like an idiot. And for instance, by the way, they use far too much air conditioning in New Orleans. I mean, far too much. I'm not thin-skinned about that. You know how much they use? This is absolutely true. I was in that hotel for 2 months. It was a nice place, too, big, nice, fancy hotel. I never turned on the air conditioner in my room. Never. And it was still so cold in the hallway that just opening the door for room service or anyone who knocked and had something to deliver, it made it so cold in my room, I wore my winter coat 100% of the time. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but it's absolutely true. That's how much air conditioning was on. And I don't know about you. I don't need that much. I walked to Brooks Brothers. I wanted to get a new shirt, and the outside was beautiful. It's hot, yes, but so what? Of course, I wasn't working that day. I was on hold, and I walked to Brooks Brothers, which is about a quarter mile or half mile away, and it was terrific. It was nice to walk, well, through the streets and across the plaza and, of course, across broader boulevards, and the outside was beautiful. Folks, I'm telling you, though, opening the door to Brooks Brothers was so cold in there, I gasped, and I'm not exaggerating. You open the door and that air comes out and wraps itself around you, and every time I just went, I mean, you would too. It was just so cold. And I went in there, not mad, not angry, not annoyed. I just, which they must see all the time. Come on. Come on. And that's why whenever I went anywhere there, I'd like to sit outside at a cafe. It's nice. Is it hot? Is it warm? Yes. But so what? That's what New Orleans is. And what charming people, too. By the way, just to let you know, Undercover Blues was not the original name of that movie. And I still think the original name, well, it was Cloak and Diaper, which I think may be one of the best titles I've ever heard. Well, that's pretty good. How do you like that? Cloak and Diaper. Well, it's based on Cloak and Dagger, but Cloak and Diaper, well, so I guess they're spies, But they have a baby, and with the diaper. Yes, exactly. It's not only a witty, interesting title, Cloak and Diaper, but it makes you smile, and it tells you exactly what the movie's about. Doesn't it? Well, they're spies, and they have a baby now. And what's wrong with that? And I still remember. Oh, boy, it was just amazing that we're on the set. We're shooting the movie. But all the folks in California and Hollywood, or the executives, didn't like the title, didn't like Cloak and Diaper. It was too perfect, and they had to change it. Why? I don't know. No one ever knows. And they all came out, well, six or seven folks, executives from Hollywood, from the studio, and they flew out. Of course, they flew out first class and stayed at a hotel that was a lot nicer than ours or anyone's. You know, they, after all, they're coming out to where their movie is being shot. And then they had a meeting the first morning. They got there with Kathleen Turner and Dennis Quaid and the director. It was nice, but they met in the trailer to talk about a new title, which I didn't think that no one thought they needed a new title. But they did. They came up to 2-3 hours at the meeting. They came up with Undercover Blues, because the family name for Dennis and Kathleen, for their characters in the movie, the last name was Blue. And why? I don't know. But it was. So that was the last moon. So they changed it to, well, their agents. So they could be, well, undercover. And they're the Blue family, so they're the Blues. They're an undercover family, the Blues, the Undercover Blues, and it gave them the Blues, kind of, or something. So they were a little depressed, which they weren't, but it doesn't matter. So that's just one of those examples of maybe the greatest title in the history of show business, Cloak and Diaper. But no, that's no good. Got to be changed to Undercover Blues. And but there you are. And our driver, in fact, who's a Cajun, once again, everybody's a Cajun there. They were just so interesting and charming to listen to. They had ways of saying everything. He picked us up, me and Oba, another great actor, Oba Babatunde. And he and I became friends the day we met and still are. And So he picked us up, our driver, and said, "Hi, how are you?" And we said, "How are you? Great. Good morning." And he said, he just jumped in and said, "I only had one drink last night." He said, "Three fingers of whiskey in a number 4 wash tub. But it was only one drink." And he said that. Now, we laughed. That's kind of funny. "Well, I only had one drink last night. It was 3 fingers of whiskey in a number 4 wash tub," which, by the way, is a lot of whiskey, isn't it? I mean, that's like a ton of whiskey. But he smiled and just said that. They were all terrific. And, in fact, one of the nights, one of the cops on the set, every movie has cops on the set. Not like this movie. I mean, sometimes, look, I've been in a bunch of these things, and they were, so the cops are always welcome there. You need cops. 3 or 4 cops who hang around the outside of the set and just make sure no one's driving onto the set if they're about to shoot, and no one, make sure people aren't strolling or stretching their necks and they're going to see something, so that you don't want them in the movie and to be visible. But that's, sure, that's cops. But here in New Orleans, so we knew all the fellas, and they would stroll over in the full uniform and obviously guns, hats, full, you know, blue uniforms. And and he had come up to I was standing there with Dennis Quaid and Oba and Tom Arnold, that's right. And he came over to us and says, "Where you boys going tonight?" You know, we didn't say anything about we were going somewhere. And we said, "Oh, well, we just thought we'd go to this thing, this place at the thing of the whatever the..." We heard, and he just said, no, you don't want that. "No, that's no good." He said, "You don't know, they don't have,
good food there. They ain't going to, you don't know what kind of drink they're going to give you there. You don't forget that place. He said, look, I'll tell you what, I'll pick you up 8 o'clock tonight. I'll pick you up at the hotel and I'll show you a good place, place where they know how to make a drink. And of course, what did we know? We just said, oh, okay. You know, we were just standing there. Sure enough, he came by at 8 o'clock to the hotel and we were in the lobby and he came by still in uniform and he, put us in the police car and drove us to this one place. Can't even remember the name, but so it wasn't late. It was 8:30, 9 o'clock, and we get in there, and well, there's a band playing, and it's a, you know, Cajun rock or something or other. Those instruments that do that. So it was, oh, it was a nice place to be. And he walked over. The owner came up to him and said, hi, Bobby, good to see you. Are you all right? And it turns out, what a coincidence, because the place was owned by his brother. Isn't that amazing? Well, that's kind of a funny thing, isn't it, folks? And he says, so they shake hands. Yeah, good to see you, too. And he said, he just pointed us out, and he said, you these boys a table there? And they sat us down and brought us drinks. We didn't order them. They just brought us big drinks. And I mean, more than three fingers of whiskey in a number four wash tub. And they set them down in front of us with a, I'm trying to think, it was, maybe there was a cherry in it, but I don't really think so. It was just a big glass, like a milkshake glass, and a few ice cubes, not a lot, like three, and then, and no straw, just you pick it up and you go. And that's what we did. Oh, all right. And then they brought us some food on plates and platters. We didn't order anything, by the way. That's just something worth mentioning here. We didn't say, boy, we sure are hungry. Didn't have dinner on the set. And what do you have to eat? We didn't say a thing. So they just put food down and we ate it. What was it? I don't know. Who knows? They didn't know. And the music was and it was good. And so we... you get about halfway through one of those drinks, that food tastes pretty good, and we chomped our way through it, and we got a second drink. We had two drinks, the two of these gigantic drinks. Each drink was like a punch bowl, and we had that too, and then we, our driver, the cop, said to us, all right, come on now, I know where to take, and he said to his brother, I know where to take him, I'll take him to Jimmy's place now, and, Jimmy, of course, was another brother of his. And he said, so he did. Well, we were right. We had a belly full of food and a belly full of three fingers of whiskey. And we went with him outside and he put us back in the police car. And, oh, by the way, that's he put the siren on wherever we were going because, well, why not? You know, it didn't seemed to make sense. Well, nothing makes sense to us. We didn't know anything. And I remember, in fact, driving down a coast road past, and there was a levee on the right, which is the big thing, like a big, oh, a big hump of concrete, and the thing looked about 20 feet high, 20, 25 feet high. And one of us, I said, it might have been me, I said to the driver, say, what is that? What's on the other side of that? And he looked in the rearview mirror like I was the dumbest guy in the world, and he said, "The ocean." And we all said, "The ocean? Well, what do you mean the ocean?" Because New Orleans, you know, is below sea level. You may not know that. That's why all the movies you've seen of New Orleans, when they shoot something in a cemetery, all the crypts, everything in the cemetery is above ground. And including the coffins, because they're below sea level. And so, what's on the other side of those? The ocean. And then somebody else said, well, what happens if they break? And another thing with the eyes in the rearview mirror, and he said, you die. You'd be dead. We all be dead. Oh, okay. Then we went to Jimmy's place and had one more drink, a giant drink, and they brought more food. We didn't order it. We didn't want it. But now it's again another on a table. All right, okay. And these chairs that wobble. And Jimmy, as I said, well, they were all brothers, and how nice that is to keep a family together. And we had to work the next day. So now it's about 10:30, and, you know, we all said, and Dennis and me and Tom and Oba just said, you know what, let's go back to the hotel and just shower up and get to sleep. Does anyone still sleep in New Orleans? And he said, yeah, that's a good idea. And he took us back there. You know what, though? You have to, that's how charming these places are. Like New Orleans, for crying out loud. And I bought a seersucker suit. That's why I mentioned it in the beginning. At a place the wardrobe people in the movie said was the finest in New Orleans. Now, I don't mean a fancy place. I don't mean handcrafted or anything, or with chairs to sit with fabric on them or anything. It was just things piled up there, but they were known as the best place if you wanted a seersucker suit, and a new one and a really well-made one, you go there. And so I did. And again, that's so weird. Life is so funny. Another cop from the set drove me there. Because I said, can I get a ride over to there? He said, sure, yeah, I'll take you right there. And he did. He took me there. And I bought a seersucker suit and a pair of white bucks, which in my mind, well, that's what you wear with a seersucker suit, isn't it? And some Argyle socks and a white shirt, a Brooks Brothers shirt. I know I could have gone to Brooks Brothers again, but I couldn't take the air conditioning. And this place had no air conditioning, which I loved. We'd go in there. I tried the suit on. Fine. You know what? And they just took it, by the way, right there and sewed up the pants and with a cuff. And they did it right there. And I mean in 3 minutes. And then they brought it back. I handed it to me. And I said, well, that's pretty good service. Holy mackerel. And I got a tie. And you know what? Then I went back with the cop into the police car again. He drove me back to the hotel. Of course, I wasn't working that day. And I said, well, how do you like that? And it wasn't gigantically expensive, by the way. I think the whole thing was $110 with all that stuff, the shirt, the tie, the socks, the white bucks, and this brand new handmade seersucker suit. And that's right. And so funny because, you know what? My wife came to visit for the weekend. We weren't married yet, actually. But we were heading there, and we were going steady. So I said, come on out. Come on out and spend the weekend with me in New Orleans. Let's make it a 3-day weekend. And I took her to a big deal restaurant in, I want to say, the Quarter. Down in the Quarter. I don't know what that means. But this was a fancy place. Not too fancy, but just nice. And I wore my seersucker suit, my new outfit. And she thought that was okay. She thought it was a little nuts, but, and it was. But you know what? I wore it there in my white bucks, my white shirt, my tie, and that seersucker suit. And you know what, though? I think one of my best stories or moments from New Orleans was that I had a job there in stand-up the night before at a theater there, and it was the one night. This is a dangerous place to go out. I mean, I don't mean you're going to get beat up. I mean, dangerous. No one kids around there about liquor. They're not there to kid around. And as I said, they just bring you drinks, and they just bring you food, but just drinks. They keep going, and that was the one night in my life I didn't feel like going out, because after the show, come on, yeah, we go out now. We take you to the... I said, you know what? Do me a favor, because I was leaving town the next day, morning, like a 7:30, 8 o'clock flight, the very next day, and going home. And I did something I've never done before. I just said, do me a favor, take me back to the hotel, and they did. And I called home. And, you know, take your shoes off, wash up, brush your teeth, and turn on HBO or whatever you do. You're in the hotel room. So I didn't have a single drink that night. And the next day, the next morning, well, they took me to the airport with the sirens on. And I got, they knew how to take me in to get, well, registered and with the get the ticket. So you don't have to wait online. And I think that's kind of the thing in New Orleans. If they, anybody who sees those uniforms, they just say, yes, can I help you? And then, so nobody's kidding around there. And I got on the plane, and this was in first class. So the people who booked this show gave me a first class ticket there and back. And that's always nice. Come on, who doesn't want that? And I had had a decent night's sleep, and I wasn't out, and I didn't have anything to drink. And I sat down, and the guy next to me in the very next seat there in first class was someone I had been in another movie with. And this is his name. Oh, I love this guy. Brutus. Brutus the Barber. I think Beefcake. He was a great wrestler. Always was. And he was working the night before, too. He was doing, as they call it, a show. He had a show there in New Orleans. And he was going back the next day, too. But he made a mistake. I looked at him. I said, well, how do you like that, Brutus? Good to see you. He said, Larry, hi. And he had that little rough voice. And I looked at him, and I said, oh, no, they took you out. And he nodded, and I just said, it's a bet. All right, you'll remember that. It's a dangerous place to go out with these folks, okay? And he said, I know, they just, oh. Because they don't stop, do they? And he said, no, they don't. And this guy had had maybe, 40 minutes sleep? No sleep? And he was plastered, and he didn't want to be. And he fell into their trap there. And I've done that before, but not this day. And I said, hang on a second. Let me do something for you here. I just raised my hand. Now, both of us are in first class, and the flight attendant comes by and said, do me a favor, bring this man 5 Cokes right now. Not cans of Cokes. I mean, just in glasses with ice, please, as soon as possible. And he looked at me, I said, do me a favor. Just let me tell you, I'll tell you what to do here. Just let me help you out. She brought soon, fast, 5 glasses of Coke, and he took the first sip. You could see it was just great. This is good. And I said, I know. Now, what you're going to do is before we take off, drink those. Drink all of those. And then, you know what? You'll see. It'll calm you down. It'll get your blood moving again. And I said to the flight attendant when she came back, just bring him 2 more now, please. And I said, don't drink these 2. You're going to leave them on your tray. And you put your head down against the window there and go to sleep. And you'll catch up, you go to sleep. And he slept the whole way. So New Orleans to LAX to Los Angeles is, well, not that long. It's 4 hours or something like that. He slept almost the whole way, but it was good for him. And then when he told me when he woke up, he went to the restroom there and he washed his face and, you know, washed his hands and did his business. And he came back, and that's when he had those 2 Cokes there, and he kind of pounded those down and said, wow, you're all right. And I said, I know, but you learn from your mistakes. He said, yeah. And then he told me he wasn't going home, see. He was going into the airport. He was meeting his wife and the kids and the cherry on top and his mother-in-law. And they were all going with him. He had a match, a show in Japan, in Tokyo. And so for him, he was just going to meet them, pick them up at the gate, and then they were going to go to the other gate and head to Japan. And I said, here's what you're going to do. Listen to me. Once you get everybody seated there, okay, and you get yourself seated, those are going to be nice seats again. They're going to be first-class seats for them. And I said, what you do is, now you go to the washroom, go to the restroom first thing. And then you say to the flight attendant, do me a favor, please bring me a beer right now, a cold beer. And in fact, ask for 2. And he looked at me and I said, just gets the blood moving again, okay? And gets it so you can, well, digest all the other stuff that's in your bloodstream now, all the rest of that liquor stuff from New Orleans. And I said, you do that, stand right there next to the flight attendant and drink them. You don't need a glass. Drink them down. And then you're a passenger. Come on, you're a big guy, you're a star, you're a wrestler. Come on, stand there. If you want, burp. It doesn't matter. You just get it all out, and then go to the bathroom. Wash up, same thing. Pee, whatever you want. Then you go back to your seat and, well, see if you just can't get to sleep again. And, you know, without your wife just staring at you saying, you know, I'm going to kill you. And I said, do that. And folks, life is great. Life is funny. And you know what? We both walked off the plane together and into the airport there. You're in the airport. And at the gate there, they were all waiting for him. Another good move. And the kids said, Daddy, hey, you all right? And the wife just glances at him. And I mean, from 40 feet away, she glances and she knows. What woman doesn't know? Come on. And he said, hey, good to see you. And the mother-in-law standing there also tapping her fingers. She knows. And it was good last night. Hey, I won. But he just needed to get moving. And he said, hey, you know, Larry, you ever met Larry on the other movie there? And she looked at me. Well, she wasn't happy to see me. She looks at me and looks me up and down. Did you take him out? Did you do this? No, I didn't, but it doesn't quite matter. And I almost laughed because she was as tough as she needed to be. She wasn't as big as Brutus, but you know what? She was big enough. And I said, all right, you know what? It's nice to see you. And I said, pal, have a good trip. And he looked at me like, please don't go. And we shook hands, and I went to get my bag at the luggage return and go home. A great guy, a great wrestler, and someone who just needed a little more sleep. And I suppose I sure know that feeling. We know the same things, folks. You and I know the same things. That Homer is Homer and Pluto is a planet. So be well and remember. If you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there to love you who wasn't mad at you, you know what, folks? The game's over and you've won. Be well, and we'll see you here next time.